Good morning, I'm Vera and I'm an addict. I've been quite nervous about this in my head. You know, it was going to be a room full of 300 people and I was going to put up there and be judged by all of you. And I am quite aware of the fact that that's just an illusion, you know, of that fear. And I can only share my experience, what's been passed to me, the way I see and understand it to the best of my ability, and I hope that I can help somebody in this room. I came to recovery, to the 12-step fellowships, and that's fellowships because I first entered into another fellowship, a sister fellowship, or the mother fellowship. And the person who took me was a strong believer. It was a guy, a lot of you know him. He was a strong believer that 12-step is 12-step, and I carry that with me. I believe a 12-step program is a 12-step program. And so I started attending different meetings. What happened was I related most to CA, and I feel that CA is my home. That's where my sponsor is. That's where I heard a very loud message, and I would like to carry that message to any other 12-step fellowship that I feel I relate to and I belong to, you know. What happened was, I mean, I come from good family, if that makes any sense. It's the family that fits the frame of the parents are together. Everybody is growing in their career, you know, the mothers taking care of the house and the kids, and the kids are behaving well, and we go to the right holidays, to the right places, we appear a certain way, you know. It's like, I don't know if any of you have seen Desperate Housewives, Bree's family, you know, you take a picture, and that was us, you know. And I was the eldest, I am the eldest. I have a gap of 6 years between my sister and myself, and my mother had me when she was very young. She was, let me backtrack. She lost her mother when she was 15 to cancer. Her father was a politician, so he was never ever available to her and to my aunt. So they had to take care of themselves. I believe today that they didn't feel loved, you know. And so when my mother met my father, she felt loved, you know, she was saved. And that comes into my story afterwards, that feeling of being saved. She married, she had me when she was 20, and I know today that she's done the best she could, you know. She's loved me the most that she could, you know, with what she had and with her fears in her, you know. I don't have many memories until the age of 12. I have little like blobs here and there. I do not believe I was traumatized in a heavy way, like sexually or physically or so on, you know. But I believe it was enough for me to feel such pain that I blocked it out. And these beliefs that I have about all this is because of all the work I've done on myself, you know, delayering and getting to the truth of what is in me, you know. I have these memories of, for example, her making a coffee for my father, and I'd say, I'll take it to him. No, I'll take it to my husband, you know. So I felt that threat, you know, that I was not welcomed in that love, you know what I mean? And as a child, that's very confusing. So I grew up with this idea that I need to seek love elsewhere. And I embedded myself in my friends' families, you know, girlfriends. I would share with their mothers. I'd go seeking relationships where I'd think that I would be saved and loved and protected, you know, that feeling that I was always lacking. And then at the age of 12, and just to add to that, you know, like all throughout my childhood, I was in the crowd, but I was not a part of the crowd. I always felt like an outsider. So at the age of 12, I considered that my first geographical. I really wanted to go to that boarding school. My parents agreed. I went, you know, it was changing the whole environment. So there I discovered alcohol, and alcohol gave me that feeling of warmth, of love, of safety, you know? It changed how I felt inside. And I didn't think much of it, and I've never really clung on to any mind-altering thing, including relationships in that, for too long, you know? So it went on. I tried different substances. I smoked a little bit of weed. I didn't like it. I felt out of control. I tried cocaine. Didn't really do anything for me in the beginning. But I tried. I experimented. And I had really strict boundaries. You know, that picture of perfect family thing? You know, it was very scary for me to get out of that picture frame. I was always living on the line, you know? But boundaries started breaking, you know? So I started experimenting more and more. I started doing more and more things that I wouldn't have thought that I'd do, you know, that my mother wouldn't approve that I would do, you know. And so I grew up with this, you know. I drank a lot, and I was very proud of the fact that I could outdrink any guy, and you know, and I was a good drunk to begin with. And then I would have blackouts, and I'd say, wow, that Jägermeister used to get me to a blackout right away. I won't drink Jägermeister anymore. I'd change up, you know, I'd start drinking something else, and it gave me a buzz for a while, and then it went away, you know. So it was always trying to manage that thing, and always trying to get that warmth in me, you know, that feeling of love and safety that it gave me. And when I was in a relationship, I could get that feeling from the relationship, you know. It made me safe. And I would start smoking the cigarettes my partner is smoking. I did Ramadan with a partner, you know. I could go to any length to get that feeling of love, you know. And, you know, yesterday we heard some stories about the hardcore substances. For me, I've never touched heroin. That does not make me less of an addict, you know. I came in here because I had made a promise to myself. Like, I mean, not to anybody else. I thought nobody knew. I made a promise within my heart to myself, I will never touch cocaine again, you know. I could drink, I could go out, I could do whatever, but cocaine I would never touch, because it took my soul out, you know. I became so numb with it. That was the thing that crushed me, yeah? So I went out my last night. I was with that guy from the fellowship that brought me in, which I'm really grateful for, and with another one, and I called him the angel and the devil. So we went out, and the angel, you know, he was just watching me. He let me be myself, you know. And I had shared that with him, that I never wanted to touch again. And so he said, yeah, okay. So we're out. I had a few drinks, and the devil is there. Do you want some? And in the end, I said yes, you know, despite that feeling and that need to stop, you know, that internal promise that I'll never touch this again, I did, you know. I had no barrier. I had no control. I had no choice. I had to have that, you know. It was such a thirst. So that same night, I end up in an apartment with the devil. The coke has run out, and he's starting to try and get with me. And I was like, what the hell is going on? I don't want to be here. I'm not here because of the guy. I'm not here because I'm having fun. I'm not here because of anything but this stuff that just finished. And I want to be out of here. And I went home. I couldn't sleep. Called the angel, and he told me his story. He took me to a meeting, and that same night I had a dinner, I had wine. I could not drink the wine because I went and I was told, listen, with an open mind. I could not get anything from that wine in front of me, you know. That was after one meeting. Like, I heard something that I couldn't do it anymore, you know. So I kept on going to meetings. I was told to get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. I thought I could manage my sponsor, you know. I kept on going to the meetings, and I was not feeling much better, you know. I was never an everyday user. It wasn't my story, you know. I was a binge user, so I could stop, but I could never stay stopped, you know. A chronic relapser, as we said yesterday, you know. So I ended up going to the CA meetings, and I heard somebody's quite powerful message, and at that moment, it really resonated with me. So it was a guy, and I asked him for direction, who to ask to sponsor me, and I was directed to my current sponsor. And what the journey has been incredible. Well, to begin with, I was completely dishonest with her. As I said, you know, relationships are a big thing for me. So I got involved with a married man in recovery, having heard that I should not date in recovery. I should stay single, and I don't know what, you know, all these things. I'm not saying that I was told that by my sponsor. I'm saying that I've heard that, yeah? Despite all that, because I need to get burnt myself, you know? I went and I did it, and it was completely out of selfish motives. It's not like I was drawn to that person. It was more like, do you want to come for a trip? Oh, for a trip, let's go. Motive, you know, I got burnt. I ended up falling for the guy, and it burnt me, you know? Anyway, I was two months in, supposedly doing the steps, in so much pain, and I spoke with that angel that brought me in, and I said, something's up, you know, this is not working for me. And he said, well, I told him the whole story, you know, what had happened. And he said, what does your sponsor say? I said, fuck no, she's going to judge. I can't tell her. He's like, no, that's not it. You don't get it. So I did call my sponsor, and I got honest. And ever since that day, I have been honest 100%. The only times when I'm not honest is because I'm dishonest with myself, because I don't see the truth. And then normally I'm put in check, you know. But I found that to be a very, very key thing to be able to be completely open with the person who's taking me through the work, and who's connecting me to a power greater than myself, and who's guiding me through this spiritual experience, you know. I could not say that I'm an alcoholic or an addict when I came in here. I could not speak, you know. I find that the ego can express itself here or here, but that's still an expression of the ego, you know. So my ego, I thought I was so humble and so on. I was not. I was so egocentric, but egocentric in the sense that I was so under, you know. Like, my expression of ego was like, I'm so worthless, I'm so self-pity, you know. That is ego for me, you know. And it can go up and down, but when I came in, it was that, it was buried, you know, and very expressed. I could not speak, so I would cry all the time at the meetings because I related, and people were saying things that I felt, you know. I thought I was alone always, and that barrier of me not being able to say or believe that I am one of you guys was very quickly broken with the understanding of what I suffer from. And I suffer from a threefold illness. My emotional and spiritual bankruptcy, you know, that, you know, what we call the bedevilments, they were extremely expressed. I mean, that was my bankruptcy, you know. I had the external stuff, you know, going on. I have my family that lives here, you know, they will never leave me. I don't know, maybe they will, but I don't think so. Anyway, they had my back. So financially, I was surviving. I had a life, you know. But spiritually and emotionally, I was crushed. I had no feeling. I used to say, if I have a gun to my head, I don't give a fuck, you know. I'm sorry for my language. It was that bad. So when that was explained to me as a symptom of my disease, I started, you know, and I related to people in the rooms, I started seeing that the this is me, and if that problem is identified, then there is a solution for me, you know. And I saw people in the rooms that had gotten that solution. I understood that I have no mental defense, you know. What I was saying to you, you know, that promise that I made to myself that I'll not pick up, and I broke. That was, I don't have a barrier. I don't have a choice, you know. It chooses me. And then finally, but very importantly, that physical allergy. And I was like, well, I can have one drink and not take a line. I can have one drink and go home, you know. For me, alcohol was always a gateway, but I wouldn't take cocaine without having had alcohol first. But I thought, you know, I can just not go there. But I couldn't. It was a lie, you know, and I had to see through that. Once I start, I don't know when I'll stop. Not always, but when I have one, two, a few, I will always end up there. And it's progressive. And I, I, I'm very lucky and very fortunate that I didn't have to keep on breaking boundaries, you know. It got me at cocaine, and I'm very happy for that. I'm very grateful for that. I don't know if I'm going on too long.
Are you fine?
So yeah, prior to coming to recovery, I was always seeking something, you know, spiritual. I have prayed, I have meditated, as I said, I've done Ramadan, and, you know, I've always seek the connection with something greater than myself. So when I came into the rooms and I heard the word God and people were trying to convince me that it's not that scary, I wasn't scared, you know. So I was like, okay, well, how do you get to him, you know? I believe in it. So I had to understand that my conception of my higher power of God was not adequate, you know. It was judgmental. I had to pray for forgiveness. I don't pray for forgiveness nowadays. I can't, because I don't find anything to be wrong, you know. It's my higher power today is loving, unconditional. It's ever present, you know. It's in everything, and I don't find that there's injustice in the world today, you know. And that has evolved, you know. I've worked through the steps twice. The first concept of God was one, but it's become so much more complex and in depth, and it really works for me, you know. And I don't only believe it, I know it in my soul that it is what it is, you know. And I believe without that crucial step, I would not be able to, you know, go through the rest of the program. A few people have shared at this convention, and they have shared their step five with multiple people. I have done that as well. I have done 2 step 4s, shared them with 2 people each time, a man and a woman each time. In the step four, I found not only these character defects, but I found very, very core belief systems, you know, which make me or drive me to certain decisions and patterns in my being, you know, which I don't believe are aligned with God, you know. It's where my resistance comes in, you know, because I equal the defects and the core beliefs as resistance from God. You know, it separates me, it takes me away from the path. It was very exciting for me to do the step four. I've heard so many people, they come in and they're so petrified of that step four, and I was so excited to get to know what is going on, where's the wrong bit, you know, please fix me. And I believe that these character defects express themselves very strongly before they kind of are lifted, if that makes sense. And the reason for that, I believe, is because we need to really recognize what they are, you know. But that was my case. I mean, I don't want to speak for everyone else. I made a list of amends, you know. Sorry, backtracking a little bit. With the sex inventory, that's what showed me a lot about my parents, you know. I could not ever imagine that I had a pattern with relationships and that I was always seeking something. And today I've realized that anything, any decision based on self equals pain, you know. Self, I mean selfish motive. It's all about my motives. If I want you to like me, if I want this, if I want that, if I'm trying to get a promotion, a job, a friend, a boyfriend, anything, you know, it equals pain. And I will keep on doing it. I'll keep on doing it until it gets painful enough for me to let it go, you know. So yeah, coming back to, you know, after step 8 and step 9, made a list of all the people that I had harmed. And to begin with, I did not think I had harmed anyone. Everyone else was to blame. Everybody had harmed me. You know, they had always been so bad to me. And having looked at my side of things, I realized that I always have a part in everything. Yeah, that's where the self comes in every single thing I did, every resentment I had, if you were judgmental to me, I judged you before even, you know, anything that I resent and triggers me, you know, in somebody, I possess in myself. So yeah, I, having made that list of amends of people that I need to make amends to, I started the first time around with the steps, you know, one there, one here, you know, always approaching the people with humility, with kindness, you know, understanding that this is about them, not about me, you know, it's, I have harmed them, I've seen my side of things, I need to crush my ego, you know, my ego is smashed, you know, sharing all I've done, everything, yeah, no secrets, with the sponsor, with a man and a woman, it's like, I mean, today I can sit and I can share my step five with all of you, and I don't care, because that girl is dead, you know, we spoke about death yesterday, and I believe that girl that came in died, I mean, and she was, I am lucky that she was eager to die, you know, and so yeah, with that death, the new person comes in and makes the amends, and it's not about saying I'm sorry, it's not about me feeling better about apologizing, it's not about an apology, it's about a change, and the change is permanent only because I've gone through the entire process, you know, I've said sorry many, many times before, I've never, although maybe I meant it, I've never been able to stick to it, you know. So I started tidying up, making amends, and, you know, I got comfortable and I kind of stopped. And that's when my sponsor nudged me a little bit and said, hey, you know, if you're not carrying on forward, if you don't keep on doing whatever you need to do, because it's an everyday thing, it's an ongoing thing. If you're not going forward, then you stop, and then you start going backwards, you know? And I don't want to paraphrase you. Sorry if I am. So I realized that something was already starting to change, you know? It was very, it was comfortable, but it wasn't growth, you know? So I got scared, and I jumped up and made 12 amends in one day. And I just carried on for the next week. I think I cleared up, I made all the amends, and I moved forward. But then it was something that was happening at that point. I had gotten into a relationship with somebody in recovery, maybe 3 months in. So I was a complete newcomer. And that person had a bit of time, and I know today that my motives for entering in that relationship was because I wanted what he had. I could have that recovery that I wanted and I seeked, you know, anything that I lacked within myself, I seeked in other people, you know. So that's my side. I know that today, you know. And I had been very resentful because I thought, how can you, with time, you know, an old timer, go out with a newcomer, how dare you? And it's nothing to do with that. It's how it was supposed to be, you know. And I take full responsibility for the fact that I went out seeking what he had, you know. So a few months I think it was about, I was on step 10 already, yeah? And I started getting extremely resentful. I was blocked out of God completely. I was meant to be writing vision work and, you know, just sitting with things and letting things come to me. How can something come to me when I'm sitting in resentment? It was impossible. So I was writing out all this inventory on a daily basis. And I was really controlling my recovery. I was really just clinging on. I have to meditate. I have to pray. It's like all has to be very well structured and then I'll be okay. But I wasn't okay. And I'm lucky that I realized, you know, I mean, I had also thoughts of maybe I can drink, you know, it creeps in with, and I was very lucky to realize that. And I couldn't have done it without my sponsor, to see the truth, because my mind lies to me all the time. So we embarked upon the steps again, and it's been very different. I being physically sober and emotionally more unblocked than in the first time around, my feelings were so much sharper, you know. So anything that was coming to me through that process of the steps, it could get very painful, you know. So I sat with things, you know. I knew that that was the process and I had to go through it. I had to appreciate the pain, you know, because it was growth. And things had changed. We had delayered a lot of superficial things in the first step forward. The second step forward took a lot of things that now I understand, you know, what I was saying about my family, my mother. And it has changed me. I used to come to meetings and sit because I was very fearful of going back out there. I did not want to go back there. And things recently, over the last few months, you know, having embarked on step 12 properly and having a sponsee, and just things are changing in me. And I come to meetings because I want to give, because I'm so grateful for what's been given to me, you know. I used to say that I'm a grateful addict, but I was grateful, but now it's like I would not change it for anything in the world. I'm so pleased to be on this path, and I wish to give everything that I have. I can only give what I have, but I'm in growth, you know, and I will keep on growing. I'll keep on being able to give. And I used to pride myself as somebody that was not materialistic, you know. Like, I always believed these things. Like, I believed I was honest when I came in. I was not, you know. Things evolve. Now it's much more real. It's about spirit, you know. And I want to end on gratitude. And, you know, I didn't have feelings when I came in. And I always surrounded myself with men. I always felt comfortable with men. My best friends were men. My surrounding was full of men. They could drink like me. They spoke like me, you know. I felt fear around women. I felt judgment. I wanted to have a male sponsor in the beginning. I asked, you know, the angel 5 times to sponsor me. He said, no way. And then I had asked the person who guided me to my sponsor to sponsor me. He said no as well. And so I was seeking out that thing, you know, from men. So when I was guided to my sponsor initially, I was very, very scared. And it was very new to me. You know, I had to trust a woman, and women had always fucked me over, you know. And once I got honest with her, and that, you know, it was soul to soul, she taught me so much. And I've never loved a woman. I'm gonna cry now. And I love you so much.
Thank you.
And I'm so grateful for everything that you've helped me achieve, you know.
Thank God.
That connection, you know. And today I'm able to help other women as well. And I've developed relationships with people in the rooms, women, you know. We were talking about starting a women's meeting yesterday. Life has changed completely. Thank you.